Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Burko and Brentley with you, and always good to connect. I'm up in Connecticut. I think you were here earlier in the week for a features meeting. Transitioned into me doing a little studio action for 4 days, which is always enjoyable. And what was kind of a lean past week in college golf, you know, there's always something going on, and we'll preview some big things in store. But, you know, this is where I get the sense the 4 to 6 week run of the fall is fast and furious.
Yeah, it really gets going after this week. And, you know, Burko, I've been wrestling with a huge decision these past few days. And it's whether to subscribe to Scoreboard Pro, you know, because the free iteration has worked so well. You know, why not fork over some more cash for a couple extra features?
Why are we still going down the rabbit hole of what we should all know accordingly?
Hey, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure there's a lot of bells and whistles, but I think it's kind of bad form, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you can't get the initial thing right and coaches' emails and email inboxes are being inundated with more emails asking for more money. It just seems like, you know, kind of maybe slow the roll on that just for a few weeks until you can get all the tweaks, as they say, ironed out.
Let's get to the stuff we do know. Chambers Bay, USC, the ladies successful. Catherine Park, she wins as well. A clean sweep for Justin Silverstein, his team, and a squad that has a lot of intrigue from my perspective. I mean, Catherine Park, you know, I go back to Greyhawk, what was it, 18 months ago almost, of starting the final day, thinking she might win an individual championship. Her good friend, Rose Zhang, playing in her final college event. We know how that played out. Rose prevails, ends on the highest of highs. But Catherine Park hasn't really missed a beat, you know, and I'm always big into winning, wherever you are, whatever you do. But it will be interesting to see if that hiccup by Catherine Park at Greyhawk opens up the door for more success down the road. And that question, maybe it can't even be answered by us or her for a year or 3 years or 5 years. She is quietly becoming one of the best players in college golf. And maybe it's not as quiet as we think, but she is dependable. She is solid. So many people were enamored by her at the Curtis Cup a few weeks ago. I think she checks a lot of boxes, and then you get the younger players playing well for USC. Justin Silverstein has done a really good job finding the pieces, putting it all together. Park now 4 collegiate wins, Bailey Shoemaker tie for 6. This is a dynamic that could serve this squad well come April and May.
Yeah, you talked about lean earlier, or you used that word, and this squad is very lean. Like, there's not a lot of margin for error if you have injuries or poor play, slumps, things like that. But, I would compare Catherine Park almost when you look at the ball striking and you look at the fact that it's the putter that has kind of bugged her in the past, and that aspect of her game is getting better and better. But I would compare her almost to maybe the current Scottie Scheffler of women's golf. Sure, there's some other players who may have a claim to be that number one ranked player, like a Lottie Wode or a Julia Lopez Ramirez from Mississippi State. But as far as the tools and what Catherine is capable of, and if she gets a few putts to drop, I think she could absolutely have a season like we just saw Scottie Scheffler have, where she wins 5 or 6 times. And of course, if she does that, I think Justin and his fellow Trojans are going to really like where they're at the end of May.
Yeah, we'll see how they continue throughout the fall. A lot of good things coming up in the next week. You've got this Schooner Fall Classic in Norman, Oklahoma, the Mason Rudolph Championship in Tennessee, the Valero Texas Collegiate in San Antonio, but probably the headliner, the Olympia Fields Fighting Illini Invitational. That gets going, is my date right? Is it today? Today yeah. it is. The
I gotta get this out. So this could be a preview pod, you know, because it's
that rare Friday, Saturday, Sunday headliner, if you will. But you look at the field, you've got Florida, Texas Tech, Illinois, Arizona State, Texas, and Florida State with Luke Clanton back in the lineup. We didn't see him at American Dunes in the Folds of Honor. He was playing on the PGA Tour, made the cut, now up to 15 PGA Tour U points. But Clanton, I think, as we discussed last week, needs to be in the lineup, needs to play well, I think, for the Seminoles to legitimately feel like, all right, we are one of those 6, 8, 10 teams that can play with anyone come the postseason.
Yeah, I think the watch for Luke Clanton over these next couple of months is he going to get into any more PGA Tour events? I mean, there's 7 more events in the fall. I think at this point, he really only needs to make, 2 more cuts to get to 17. And then I would say the Hogan Award is his. As we've discussed, either on this podcast or on Golf Today, Golf Central, those types of mediums, he's very close. And I think the Hogan is almost a lock for him at this point, especially after yet another made cut in solid week in Napa last week. So he's really only got to get 2 more starts and make 2 more cuts to get into that territory where we are going to see him turn pro after this season. So it's going to be interesting. Tyler Weaver not in the lineup. I don't know if that was a fact of him not qualifying or something else, but I would assume he just didn't qualify. This team, as we saw last year, doesn't need to be at full strength right now. They can afford to have Clanton out or have other guys out of the lineup. I think Trey Jones has been around long enough to know what he's doing. And now it's time to see if college golf isn't too boring for Luke Clanton. He's played on the PGA Tour a bunch. It almost seems like this would kind of be a letdown. There's going to be extra pressure too, because people are going to expect him to win each and every time out. That wasn't really the case, I would even argue, last spring. So that's a new wrinkle that he's going to have to consider in terms of every week showing up and you have that huge target on your back and a second place is a disappointment. So very intrigued to see how Luke Clanton plays on a very tough golf course that's hosted major championships against one of the best fields we'll see all season in the college game.
And you reference the Hogan Award. If you're listening to this, you're probably dialed in, but if not, that's a 12-month window of college and amateur golf. So we're not like anointing him as the college player of the year in mm-hmm. September. It's the fact of he accomplished something that hadn't been done since Nicklaus over 60 years ago of an amateur and success on the PGA Tour. So that's why seemingly it is a no-brainer right now. That could change. Someone could get into the Masters and win that as an amateur, and then everything has changed if that name is not Luke Clanton. We talk about intrigue. We have always been intrigued by watching the ladies of South Carolina and Hannah Darling, now a senior, of what she could do, what her potential is, and we have seen probably the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. I know you caught up with Hannah earlier this week to really dig a little bit deeper, peel back that onion. As we send it to that interview, give us a sense of some of the topics that you two discuss that might prove valuable to those listening this week.
Well, for those who are super tuned into college golf and especially women's college golf, you obviously know what Hannah Darling has accomplished throughout her career, especially early in her career as a freshman and a sophomore. But last year was very up and down, and I think it hit a low point at the NCAA championships when she shot 84 in the first round and was subbed out, didn't play again, didn't play a lot this summer, but you were at the Curtis Cup. That's her third Curtis Cup, gets her first win as a team in that event and had a 3-1 week. So I just wanted to talk with her and find out, what were you struggling with? How did you get it back? And obviously to kick off this fall, how do you keep the expectations from being a detriment again, which they clearly were last season? I mean, she talked about it with me, with us, you know, whether it was on TV, things like that, about how she kind of felt slighted when she wouldn't be put on a Annika Award watch list or something like that. So I was interested to see, like, what is her mindset? She referred to herself as the underdog last year. What is she, you know, what's her mindset now after starting her fall with a win at the Annika? So it's a pretty cool interview. I mean, she definitely didn't get super detailed with some of the struggles, but definitely an open and honest conversation and a little bit of, you know, fun too, you know, ranking her favorite Scotland golf courses and some cool facts, maybe embarrassing facts about her head coach. So definitely a must listen. So encourage everyone to not cancel out, keep it rolling, and it should be hopefully an enjoyable interview for you.
That being said, here's Brentley and Hannah Darling earlier this week right here on College Golf Talk.
Pleased to be joined today by South Carolina senior Hannah Darling, fresh off individual victory and team victory at the Annika Intercollegiate last week, and fortunate to catch her after a practice round for this weekend's Mason Rudolph Championship at Vanderbilt Legends Club in Franklin, Tennessee. Hannah, how'd the practice round go today? Did the good vibes and the good play and good shots carry over from Minnesota a few days ago?
Yeah, it was good. The course here, it's Vanderbilt's home course. It was awesome today. Probably we played it last year, probably in better condition this year, I'd say. But yeah, no, good vibes. I mean, the team energy is high. You know, it's nice. Kind of everyone's playing well right now and everyone's in a good place. But yeah, it was very warm. I did notice that we were all pretty exhausted when we finished, just it was very warm and humid. But no, good day. And yeah, we're looking forward to another tournament here.
So what was the mood going into the Annika? Obviously, you guys come away with a 27-shot win over Oregon. You and your teammate, Louise Rydquist, finished 1-2 on the individual leaderboard. But what's the mood going into that tournament, coming off a season in which you guys, I would say, for lack of a better word, disappointed at the NCAA championship? What was the mindset going in? What was the confidence level at?
Yeah, I think it was pretty high. I mean, you know, speaking for me and Louise, you know, we'd both had a pretty good end to our summer, I'd say. You know, obviously with Louise winning the European Ladies and then playing at the British Open, and then, you know, obviously myself having success at the Curtis Cup. I'd say we were both pretty high on confidence and on energy, which was nice. So going into the Annika, there was kind of just, it's one of those events, like it's the first event of this fall, so there's kind of no expectations, and we're just going into it and just going to have some fun, which, you know, I think is one of the reasons that we always play so well at that event. You know, out of the 4 years I've played at the Annika, we've won the team title 3 times.
Yeah.
And we've had 2 individual winners. I know, like, we've always had a good individual player showing at that event. So yeah, I think we just go into it with no expectations. And I think kind of on the flip side, that's probably what we didn't do so well at Nationals, where, you know, we just let expectations get the better of us. And I mean, we know it's Nationals, you know, you're walking around, you know what it means. It's kind of, it's what you've been working towards all seasons. And you kind of feel like, okay, I'm here, I need to perform now. But actually, I think, you know, over the 3 years that I've been at Nationals, going into my 4th next year, I'll definitely be bringing that no expectation sort of mindset into it, because I think all year round, you're not focused on performing, you're just focused on kind of the process. And then it's like the one event of the year that you have to think about results. So yeah, just sort of bringing that mindset into it and trying to replicate, you know, how we were feeling at the Annika.
On the flip side, how important is it to not overreact to, you know, a win in the first tournament on September, you know, mid-September?
Yeah, I think it's good to not overreact, but it's also good to put it in the memory bank, you know, and just, you know, it was a good field, you know, it's probably one of the better regular season tournaments that we play in our year. So, you know, it was nice. We kicked some ass, and it's a nice thing for us to do. You know, we played great, and you know, just to have that belief going into the rest of the season is nice. And it's, like, I think it's just, you know, for us, if we know we can do it, we're going to be a lot better when we actually have to do it. So yeah, that was good. But I think as well, just not letting it almost give us a false sense of security and just make sure that we keep the foot down and keep pushing. Because, you know, as you said, we're, you know, last year at Nationals, I would say we walked away a bit disappointed, especially personally, you know, with my performance. But, you know, I think we've always been a great team and we've not quite been able to finish it off on the big stage. So, you know, just, you know, keeping the expectations low and just, yeah, not letting it, you know, get to our heads a little bit and just kind of staying humble and staying motivated for the rest of the season.
Does this team have any traditions, or does Coach Kalen have any traditions of what you guys do after you win a tournament? Does she take you guys someplace special to eat? Is there something that you could do when you get back to the facility? Anything that kind of rings a bell that rewards you guys for bringing a trophy back?
Honestly, not really. I think when we...
Because you guys win so much, probably.
Yeah, I guess for coach, it's become kind of normal now. So, but yeah, no, not really. It's funny, one of the quotes, so at the Annika event, she put loads of like posters out on the course that had different quotes on them. And one of them said, "Smell the roses." And one of our sophomores didn't quite know what that meant. So we had to explain... You know, this, like, it just means take it in, you know, like, appreciate the moments. And so it was kind of one of the, like, one of the phrases for the week. It was smell the roses, and, you know, especially, like, personally, and then also as a team, we'd really tried to take it in. And so as a team, we actually went out for a nice dinner when we got back just to celebrate kind of all the success we had. But honestly, not really. We get a few days off when we get back home and kind of go again. But, yeah, coach promised me when I got my first individual win, I would get a pair of shoes. There's a pair of shoes that all the athletes seem to get, we didn't get from women's golf. And coach has about four pairs of them. So she promised me that she'd give me those pair of shoes. So she said, now that I got my first real individual win, you know, it wasn't shared with anyone else, she said that she'll probably get me the shoes. So that's nice.
What kind of shoes are they?
They're just Under Armour shoes that like all the athletes get, but I don't know, I just really like them, the garnet, and I think they're pretty cool. But yeah, nothing special.
So let's talk about your career to date. Obviously this is your last season as a freshman, first team All-American. As a sophomore, same thing, first team All-American, and then junior honorable mention All-American, which for 98% of college golf is a great year. How would you sum up and describe your junior year at South Carolina?
Yeah, I would say, you know, there was a lot of learning. There was a lot of hard times, to be honest. I think, like, you know, obviously in the fall, I played okay. In the spring, I played really well up until probably regionals, I'd say. And I just, you know, just for me, there was a lot of growth that I needed to do that I didn't quite know until, you know, it kind of hit me. And, you know, just personally, it was kind of turbulent. And yeah, I just didn't play great in regionals, didn't play great in nationals. And I think, you know, you end the season having not played well. And then in your mind, it's almost, okay, I didn't play well all season and all year. But actually I did, you know, I got my first college win. You know, I had a great few events. It just, to me, it wasn't how I knew I could play. And I think, honestly, in my 3 years at South Carolina, I've not played how I know I can play, which, you know, I think there's always been a little bit of disappointment and a little bit of, like, a chip on my shoulder knowing that I can play better. So, you know, going into my senior year, I think there's a little bit of trying to prove how good I am, but prove to myself, you know, not necessarily prove it to anyone else, as well as trying to take in my senior year and have fun. But you know, I think those last two events of the season are probably two that I'd like to wipe from my memory. You know, especially nationals, I played the first round and didn't play well. And then, you know, I had a few hard conversations with coach and thought it was the right decision to take me out of the lineup, which, you know, I think sometimes as a team, it's the best decision, but personally, it's a really hard one. And, you know, we made that decision together and, you know, made that decision, but also made the decision to grow during this summer. And, you know, I did that. You know, I put in a lot of work personally into kind of my golf, but then also, you know, mentally too, just trying to really work on that. And I feel like I'm in a much better place. So, you know, I'm in a place where I can perform now.
Where are you at right now if you or where do you think you're at right now if you were to not have taken yourself out after that first round in San Diego for the NCAAs? If you would have tried to gut it out, you know, tried to tough it out, played the second and third round, played similar golf, how far behind do you think you would be right now if you had done the opposite?
Good but hard question. I think, you know, honestly, I don't actually know if I'd still be playing golf, if I can say that. It was just really, really tough. And, you know, sometimes I need to almost press a stop button and say, okay, I need to stop this spiraling. And, you know, at Nationals, it was awful. I can honestly say it was the worst week of my life. Just with, you know, everything just made me feel awful. And I think, you know, coach kind of recognized that. And yeah, I mean, with coach at Nationals and then also right after Nationals, before I went home, we had some really tough conversations. But it was a good kind of wake up call for me. And, you know, as hard as it was, I'm very glad it happened, and feel very, yeah, like kind of grateful that it happened, because it kind of showed me where I needed to go and where I was. And yeah, it was a bit of a wake up call. So yeah, I really don't think I'd be playing golf. It was very hard. And there was a lot of tears that week, but I'm happy it happened. So
if someone were to look at your results this summer, they'd notice that you played almost exclusively match play other than just the qualifying rounds at the British Am. How important was that? And was that intentional to just play match play all summer, play a format that you're really good at, and then obviously end it with a 3-1 week at the Curtis Cup, which, you know, I'm sure was a huge boost of confidence as well.
Yeah, to be honest, there you say it. I did realize I played a lot of match play, but it wasn't intentional at all. You know, I think, you know, firstly, I love match play. I think anyone that knows me knows I love match play. I also love team golf, and every single one of those events was team golf except for the British. Yeah. But you know, that wasn't really kind of how me and my team scheduled summer. It was more, okay, I'm going to take July off. I'm going to work on me. You know, I think, you know, like British and then Arnold Palmer are two events I didn't want to miss. Whereas, you know, in July, there was a few events that I could miss. So yeah, it was just really take that time to work on me, you know, kind of go into those first few events and just tough it out in a way after taking a bit of time off and spending some time with my team back home in Scotland. But yeah, it was just very refreshing. You know, I think being back at home, I love being at home. You know, I love the team that I have around me there, and also being able to spend time with my family and friends is just very nice. And it kind of reminds me of who I am. But then also being able to, you know, put on a Scotland t-shirt again, you know, have that like pride that I feel when I do that. And then also going to the Curtis Cup, you know, it almost felt like July I got better. July I was in a better place. I went to home internationals. I played great, you know, really felt like I was building on something with my game. And then I did play the qualifier for the British Open and missed out by, I think, 2 shots. And again, you know, I think for me, what I've really learned is, yes, results might not go my way, but as long as those baby steps along the way are getting better and the small things are getting better, then results really don't matter. And I think that that's something I didn't do as well at Nationals, so it's something I've been trying to do better now. And then going into Curtis Cup, I mean, it was my third Curtis Cup and third and final, I'll say. And, you know, the last 2 times I've played it have been amazing, but they've both been losses. And I would say scores don't really reflect how great of like weeks they've been. But this year, you know, we had a great team. We had a great captain, great vice captains, great support team. And we just nailed it. And, you know, personally, I really felt like at that point it was kind of, you know, it's probably the best golf I've ever played. And again, it's match play, so it's a little bit different. But, you know, it really just made me feel like me again. And yeah, it was really easy to then come back to college and go and win the Annika, I guess, because I just had a lot of confidence after, you know, a great summer.
Talk about home, where you're from, kind of what the golf scene is like. Obviously, a lot of us know golf in Scotland is a lot better than golf pretty much anywhere else in the world. But mm-hmm. How would you describe home, and what makes it, or what made it so therapeutic for you to go back this summer and, you know, kind of unplug?
Yeah, I think it just, you know, for me, so I live, my home course is Bruminar. It's where I grew up when I was younger. You know, I played there when I was like 10 with the ladies who were all a lot older than me, but they kind of took me under their arm and took care of me. And so I live like 2-minute walk from Brumi. And it's just, you know, it just reminds me of kind of who I am and, you know, how I grew up and, you know, that very confident little kid who, you know, thought that she could do anything and she was going to be the best in the world. And, you know, I think, you know, it's almost going, you know, when you're over here, you're in a big pond with a lot of big fish. And, you know, when I go back there, I'm in a very small pond and I'm the only fish and I can really focus on me. And it's just, you know, it brings me back to how I play golf. You know, anyone that knows me knows I like to hit a little stinger every once in a while and stuff like that. So being able to actually do that and, you know, just, yeah, just remind me of who I am again. And then also just the routine of, you know, I have a great kind of, you know, I have great facilities that I can practice at. I spend a lot of time when I'm back home with my coaches, you know, both swing coach, psychologist, strength coach, you know, all those different types of people, putting coach. Like, it just, yeah, it just feels natural to me to go home, and especially my parents, you know, they're both a big part of my life. And I'd say I'm very close to them both, being an only child. So yeah, it's just nice, and it allows me to get back into a routine that, you know, I was in before I came to college. So yeah, it just, I don't really know how to describe it. It just, it's kind of peaceful and just nice to be home.
What's the best thing off the golf course to do at home? Which, correct me if I'm wrong, Bonnie Rig, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Bonnie Rig, yeah.
Which is just south of probably, what, 10 minutes from, 10 minutes south of Edinburgh?
Yeah, it's just on the outskirts of Edinburgh.
Any, for travel tips, because we're obviously at Golf Channel, we're having the St. Andrews Links Collegiate for the second straight year at the Old Course and the Jubilee Course next month. For someone traveling to that area, what's the best non-golf thing to do? Because we always hear about, yeah, you got to play this course, that course, but what's the best non-golf thing to do around home?
Yeah, I mean, you really, like, you can go 15 minutes one way and go to a beach, and it's an awesome beach, you know, kind of all along the coast of Edinburgh and down them to the east coast. But, and then you go,
is it kind of like Myrtle Beach?
Not
or the
as
complete
hot.
Opposite. Yeah.
I can't say I've ever been to Myrtle Beach, but it's definitely not as hot, and the water's gonna give you, like, gonna freeze you rather than warm you up, I'd say. But yeah, windy, so probably pretty similar in that regard. But yeah, if you then go like 10 minutes the other way, you've got mountains everywhere, and it's pretty cool. I just, you know, love the versatility of that. You know, I'll go climb mountains when I'm there, or go for a walk, or, you know, that sort of thing. But like in Edinburgh, it's just such a beautiful city. I just love it, you know, like the kind of older vibe of Edinburgh. And I mean, honestly, for us locals, when I go back during the summer and there's all those tourists there, it's quite annoying because they're all just standing there looking around, and it's like, yeah, just get out of my way. But
they're trying to find Harry Potter. That's
yeah,
doing.
They can keep looking. but yeah, it's just, honestly, you can't go wrong with anywhere in Scotland and just playing a few golf courses. But fingers crossed the weather is going to be good for you guys when you play the St. Andrews Links, because it could be pretty brutal up there.
Yeah, this is about the time of year that the DP World Tour plays. Mm-hmm. What is it? The
Dunhill?
The Dunhill Links. And what was it, last year or the year before? There was like a monsoon and it was all flooded and it was cold. Yeah, that was... that's pretty crazy. Hopefully we'll get a lot better. Hopefully we'll get the type of Chamber of Commerce weather that we got at the Walker Cup last year, because that was that was like 100% like perfect.
So it's funny because my coach, Ian Muir, is actually the head of golf at St. Andrews University. So So I know that he is hoping for some bad weather and some wind to help them, you know, get help them have a chance of playing well, you know, because obviously that's the conditions that they like and the conditions they're used to. So I know that Ian's going to have his fingers crossed for some wind that week.
So he's going to be coaching the teams that are going to be competing next week. Okay. Hopefully they can pull off a shocker.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I know that Ian is hoping for that.
Now, tell me about your relationship with him. How long have you worked together, and how often do you get up there to kind of hit balls and work on your game?
Yeah, I mean, I've been coached by Ian for a long time, like 10 years, something like that. Maybe, around 10 years, probably. We have a great relationship. You know, I would say he's a lot more than a golf coach to me. He's a mentor. He's a friend. He's just someone that I look up to and someone that I go to for advice about almost anything. And, you know, especially kind of this summer, we did a lot of work. And he was just a great kind of steady place that I could go to and talk with him. But, you know, I'll go up to St. Andrews every week, every 2 weeks. You know, it's only, it's a bit over an hour for me to drive up there from home. And we'll go to, there's a little, I almost don't want to say this, but there's a little kind of hidden practice area around the corner on the Jubilee.
You told me about this. Yeah, it's on the Jubilee court, right? Yeah, describe it a little bit, because
it's just perfect. There's not really many people that know about it, so it's normally pretty quiet. And the turf is, like, the grass is incredible there. It's, Ian always says it's sacred turf, which it is. But and then there's like a little chipping area and putting green and stuff, and it's awesome because it's kind of hidden in the sand dunes. So it's kind of sheltered when it's blowing, when it's windy. And yeah, but we'll go there and we'll spend hours there, go get lunch, come back, hit more balls. And just, it's funny, we always joke about our lessons that, you know, the best lessons are when we hit the least amount of balls, because we're normally hit a ball, talk about it for about 5 minutes, another ball, talk about it again. And, you know, that's just kind of how we've done it. We're very, you know, we like to analyze a lot of things and go into depth. And, you know, for me, when I can understand the ball and what it's doing, that's when I play my best golf. So that's kind of what we spend the most time doing. Ian's been great to me, and he's a great coach, and an even better friend.
Was there any part of your game or any particular shot or short game thing that you kind of rediscovered or picked up or got better at this summer?
Yeah, I think for me, I love hitting a draw, and kind of where my swing got to in the spring, it was pretty steep and out to in, so hitting a bit of a low fade, which to me, when I see a fade, warning lights go off when it actually isn't that bad. I just hate fading it. We were just kind of trying to get back to that nice high draw that I'm used to. But, you know, I think the thing with us is we're never changing things. We're just kind of tweaking it a little bit. And it's just those 1% changes that can help things. But, you know, we just kind of tightened up everything. And then, you know, I started working with a new putting coach this summer who, that's also been great. And I've seen a lot of good changes and kind of improvements with my putting since coming back here. So, you know, everything just is moving in the right direction. And that's exactly what I wanted to get out of this summer.
What's the easiest way to start hitting a draw again when you are getting steep and kind of coming across it the other way?
Just do the opposite, pretty much. For me.
You set yourself up, like, maybe with wind in mind too, like, or no, to maybe try to get some help from the wind just to kind of visualize it at first, or no?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, I always like to go, like, when I'm practicing, I'll always try to go into the wind when I'm practicing, just so that you see the most extreme ball flight, I would say. But, you know, just for me, it's just, you know, at the top, when the arm's kind of drop in front, that's when I hit the fade. So just really allowing a bit of a pause in the transition and then allowing the arms to drop. Kind of, that's my swing thought. But, you know, for me, the technical is better when I can match up the kind of visualization. So when I can visualize a high draw, I can normally hit it. But it's just, for me, just feeling high draws, that's kind of, what I go with.
So I asked you kind of what's a non-golf thing to do around home. Now, what are your top five golf courses in Scotland? Kind of putting you on the spot, but there's a lot to choose from. So
yeah, there is.
We will forgive you if you forget one, but just off the top of your head, top five.
Okay, I'm biased, so I have to say Broomielaw is my number one. You know, the course is amazing, and it's getting even better as the years go on. But you know, it's just the feeling I get when I play at home is unmatched. So that's one. I would say Dornoch could be two. Royal Dornoch up north is two. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I'm a member at Gullin as well. And I would actually say that I prefer Gullin number two rather than Gullin number one. So that'll be three. North Berwick, four, I would say. I've got a few friends at North Berwick, so that's a great place to be. And then I'd probably go the old course as number five. Yeah. The course is amazing, but again, it's just the feeling. It's just knowing where you are and knowing the history on that course. You can't beat that.
Is there any course in Scotland that you haven't played that you want to play?
Yes, I think it's called Macrahanish up north. And I've heard it is incredible, but I've never played it. There's a few people that keep kind of going up for a trip up there and say it's amazing. So yeah, I would love to go up there.
So I was reading your bio a little bit, and down in the personal section, it says you have an older brother named Callum Scott. Now that's
Stuart. Sorry, Callum Stuart. Yeah, he's my older brother.
Because it says Callum Scott, which is obviously, yeah, it does.
Yeah, Callum Scott is not my brother. What bio is that one? I'll need to change it.
It's on South Carolina.
Okay, yeah, I'll get that changed.
Not to put your guys' SID on black. Yes. But yeah, we will get that changed, because there's probably people out there that think that your brother's with maybe arguably the, you know, one of the top three men's college golfers right now. He plays for Texas Tech, also from Scotland.
Also from Scotland, yeah. Yeah, good no, player. Callum Stewart, my older brother. Yeah, he actually used to play golf, and that's kind of how I got into golf. But yeah, he doesn't play golf anymore, unfortunately.
And probably not quite as long as Callum Scott either, right?
No, definitely not. He does not have a chance at all.
Now, one thing that probably is correct in your bio, it says favorite Scottish food is haggis.
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
What other Scottish food is there?
Yeah, you got like haggis, you've got like black pudding, you've got like shortbread, stuff like that. But personally, you can't really go wrong with anything you eat in Scotland. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, but
better,
it's funny because that's getting a little bit controversial now. But yes, I have to say yes. But you know, with haggis, I think
you're from Scotland.
100%. But like with haggis, I think if a lot of people didn't know what it was when they ate it, they would enjoy it more. Just they let get in their head what it is. But it's actually very good. I eat it every time I'm home, and I love it.
Has Coach Kaylin had haggis before? Have you forced it upon her?
I don't think she has. I don't, like, yeah, she's not been in Scotland when I've been in Scotland. But no, I don't think she has. I don't think she would enjoy it. I don't think she would. That would be up her alley.
What's her favorite food, do you think? I mean, because you travel to tournaments with her, you know what she's trying to recommend for you guys to go eat after practice rounds and tournament rounds. What's Coach Kaylin's favorite food?
She likes a lot, actually. She likes kind of there's a fly around here. She likes sushi. She likes a lot. She does not eat breakfast. I've never seen her eat breakfast ever in the time I've been here, which is crazy to me.
Not even like a yogurt?
Oh, no, nothing. She'll have a coffee and go. But that's just Coach. but yeah, she eats a lot. A lot of different types of food. But I'd say, yeah, some sort of like Asian food maybe. Or she's not very picky, like it's not like she's very open to eating all food, which is good.
Just not pancakes and bacon and eggs and such.
No.
Best player that you've played with on another team.
Oh, on another team. Okay.
It could also be most impressive aspect of someone's game too. You know, like the way that so and so hits their long irons or drives the ball, something like that. Because best player is kind of, I mean, it's of the eye of the beholder. You know.
Yeah. But, I would honestly say that probably Ingrid Lindblad, when you know I played 3 years with her, and you know we were both kind of playing majority of the time number one in the lineup. So I played with her a lot, and she was just impressive. I mean, it was like you kind of go around and you're talking, and you're like, it's just Ingrid, you know. It just is her. Like she was always, yeah, she just was an incredible player, you know, just very steady and just, you know, just did things that you didn't see anyone else do. And it was crazy. I was talking to one of her teammates a few weeks ago, and heard that at Nationals, you know, I think it was the first round she didn't play very well. But that was the first time in her 5 years at LSU that she did not count in the lineup.
Yeah.
Her score did not count. And just
which
trying
is
to
baffling to hear.
Yeah, trying to get your head around that, like, is crazy. And it's so impressive. And it was, you know, very fitting that she won the Annika Award last year, because she definitely deserved it. So, yeah, I don't think anyone will ever replace Ingrid.
18 wins in college is something that I can't see getting done at, you know, at least the highest level, maybe at the mid-major level. And then winner last week as a pro, too, on the Epton Tour. So congrats to England getting into the winner's column as a professional. A couple more questions, and then we'll wrap up. But you told me last spring that, you know, you and your coach kind of dubbed your junior year as the year of the underdog. Mm-hmm. Have you got a chance to talk about what, you know, your senior year is going to be? Is there a theme, or have you thrown out the themes?
Yeah, I would say we're not really rolling with that anymore, but I would honestly still say that the underdog is still standing. You know, I think especially with how I performed kind of late in the spring semester. But yeah, I think the underdog is kind of just reflecting that there's still things to kind of prove, and prove isn't the right word, but there's still things that, you know, I know I can do that I've not done yet. And yeah, just, you know, really going with that, and, you know, kind of, I guess, yeah, just performing how I know I can perform. So just still kind of rolling with that, but it's not really, I mean, we've mentioned it a few times, but probably not as much as we did in the spring.
Mm-hmm. And then team wise, speaking to Kaylin, probably about a month ago, she was talking about regionals and how she kind of felt like that course kind of punched you guys in the mouth. And, you know, you guys just were never quite the same after that, including at Nationals. What's the key this year to kind of making sure that toughness and that readiness, you know, extends through the postseason, and just to make sure you guys are giving yourself a chance to peak at the right time?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, firstly, you know, after playing three postseasons, it's going to be four in a few months, but, you know, I think regionals is a really hard week, and I would say probably a harder week than Nationals. You know, I think it's like you play all season to then go to one event, and that means everything. You know, it doesn't really seem fair in some regards. And, you know, this year we just about didn't make it. You know, it wasn't until the last hole that Lou played, and she was the last one out. It wasn't until she played the last hole that we were in. And it was just, it's kind of crazy that, you know, we were number one seed and we just about didn't make it. And I think, you know, that course, we played Auburn's home golf course, and no disrespect to Auburn, you know, it's a very hard course, and I don't think any of us particularly liked it. You know,
they'll probably take that as a compliment, to be honest.
Yeah, I hope they do, because it was just tricked up, and, you know, I don't think it really suited the majority of our team's, like, game and how we play, which was hard. And, you know, I think especially when you go to the end of the season, you know, personally, I felt pretty burnt out at that point already. So, you know, that's definitely one thing I'll be trying to improve on next year. But, you know, I think when you're feeling tired and it's the end of the year, to then go to a course that challenges you that much mentally, you know, it's hard. And especially when you're then trying to peak for Nationals, but then it's like, oh gosh, we've been prepping for nationals and we might not even get there. So I think by the time that we got to nationals, it was just like we were just mentally exhausted and we were like, oh my God, we've just about not made it here. We've never made it here, and it was a whirlwind. But yeah, we'll definitely be trying to keep the energy levels high and just, I think as well, like confidence, you know, I think that's a big thing for our team. You know, if we can just know who we are and know how good we are and going into that period, we'll have no problems.
Awesome, Hannah. Well, appreciate so much of your time today. Good luck this week. And for those following along, you can follow, I believe the scores are on GolfStat, not on scoreboard.com/clipped for this one, but good field, Texas, Arizona, Arizona State, obviously South Carolina, a couple SEC schools, Mississippi State, Vandy, Texas A&M. So should be a good one. And Hannah in South Carolina will look to stay perfect this year. And Hannah, please send us some visual evidence if you see Coach Kalen with a granola bar or a banana or something before 8 a.m.
It won't happen. So no, nothing getting sent your way. But yeah, thank you. We're going to have a great week.
Well, Berko, always a pleasure to chat with Hannah Darling, and definitely a little bit shook by the fact that her head coach, Kalen Anderson, does not eat breakfast. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that? Is it bad or good to skip breakfast?
I'm not a breakfast eater either. I have my coffee, maybe a banana late in the morning. You know, I'm trying to subscribe to that 16-hour fast, 8 hours eat kind of scenario. Doesn't always work. And don't get me wrong, I love
breakfast. That's why you guys are in such great shape. Yeah, you know, you're skipping the French toast and the syrup and...
I love breakfast. I could eat breakfast in the morning, at lunch, at night, periodically. So I can value that play. And then someone on the other might side say, hey, that is the most important meal of the day to fuel you for the next 10, 12, 14 hours. But you do a great job getting these guests when my schedule gets a bit hectic and to hear from a two-time first-team All-America selection, a three-time All-American at South Carolina, that it's not always easy, that the path is not straightforward all the time. A lot of intrigue from my standpoint, I say that word a lot, but you start the year as they did at the Anika, the clean sweep for South Carolina. You can make the argument over the last nearly decade, there hasn't been a more talented program that necessarily hasn't seen the results at the end of the year. Yep. So, you know, it's not a slight. It's the expectation and standard is pretty high now under Kalen Anderson. And I've seen too many struggles in late April and in May. And you sit there and you say, how is this possible? But that's the game of golf. So, you know, we will continue to document Darling in her final year as South Carolina ready to make that jump and maybe be in the mix on that Wednesday at the NCAA. So great job as always on that. We appreciate people each and every week for listening to us right here on College Golf Talk. For Brentley, I'm Berko. We'll do it again next week.